This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Eva Birnbaum. She's a chemist at Los Alamos National Laboratory. She's program manager of the isotope program up there. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me here.
Nice to have you, and very interesting to talk about isotopes. Let's tell our listeners what that word means, besides being the Albuquerque sports team made famous, name invented by The Simpsons.
Yes, we love that the baseball team is named the Isotopes.
Yeah.
So an isotope is really just a form of a particular element. So if you have an element like carbon or nitrogen or any metal on the periodic table, it can come with different numbers of neutrons or electrons in it. And so when this happens, the isotopes can have different properties. So some isotopes might be stable, and those are the things that make the materials all around us, but some of them are radioactive. Now, usually people think of radioactive materials as being really bad, but when they're in the right place and put to the right purpose, they can be really helpful. So we make the sorts of isotopes that are helpful and useful in medicine and in industry.
So when you talk about isotopes being kind of variables on particular elements, let's say, like carbon, what is the definition of carbon? Is it a number of protons in that element's nucleus?
That's correct. It's the number of protons that determine which element it is.
Okay. And so the number of neutrons can vary, the number of electrons can vary, but if it's got the right number of protons, it's carbon.
If it's got the number of protons, it's carbon.
Okay.
And electrons determine charge. So
right.
That's probably getting too technical here.
No, it's important because that's how one of the ways that atoms bond with other ones and make molecules.
Yeah, how you make different things. Yeah. Absolutely.
So we use isotopes, and you at Los Alamos are commercial suppliers of isotopes for all kinds of applications. What are some of those applications that other people out in the world use them for, and that they're buying from you?
So we're part of the National Isotope Program, and our mission overall is to supply isotopes that are not commercially available. And so that's really important because we don't want to compete with the private sector. We're just trying to fill a niche where the private sector, for whatever reason, is not able to have the supply that's needed. So at Los Alamos, our primary isotope is a material called strontium-82. And this is an isotope that's used for cardiac imaging. And that's our biggest application right now.
How is it used? I mean, how do you make an image using
an isotope?
Yeah.
So certain isotopes decay by different means. And those emissions that come out can be used to take pictures. So strontium-82 is what's called a positron emitter. And so PET imaging is the technology that uses those emissions to take pictures of different types of disease. So strontium-82, for example, can be injected not directly, but its daughter isotope, and it goes to the heart and sends out a picture.
PET stands for PE, positron emission.
Positron emission tomography.
Yeah. So that's one thing that you do. Another application, and I don't know whether this is something that you're doing at the lab or not, but there's some really cutting-edge cancer research that involves certain radioactive isotopes.
That's right. So we currently produce a lot of isotopes for imaging, and strontium-82 is the major one that we produce, but we're very interested in therapy. It's very important to be able to diagnose, but if you can't treat, you know, you're left in sort of a heartbreaking situation sometimes. And
right.
So for cancer in particular, we're very interested in what are called alpha emitters because they are extremely promising for what's called targeted alpha therapy, which is very good for metastatic cancer or cancer that is spread throughout the body.
How does that work?
So alpha emitters are of great utility for cancer therapy because they only travel a short distance and they deposit a lot of energy. So if that's in a bad place, it can be very damaging. But if you can target that alpha emitter into a tumor cell, it does a lot of damage in the tumor, but it doesn't have a lot of damage to the surrounding healthy tissue.
Which is very interesting and very important because, as many people know, especially who have had friends and relatives with cancer, as I think you have, as I have, all cancer therapies, or most cancer therapies that we have so far, damage healthy tissue.
Absolutely.
And including radiation.
Right. And some of the side effects from some of the treatments can be very, very difficult for the patients as well.
So one of the things that's sort of kind of paradoxical about using radiation treatment is that, I mean, radioactive substances are carcinogenic. They cause cancer. They're ionizing radiation. Is it the same process that cures it? I mean, the same thing that gives you cancer cures cancer?
In some ways, yes. And you're right. It is sort of a paradox. But it all depends on how the person is exposed to the radiation and where it goes in their body. So radiation can be a very powerful tool, and it can also be a problem. And so that's why it has to be controlled and understood.
Where are we with that kind of highly targeted radiation therapy with cancer right now?
So really, the work to make this a true clinical application is kind of in its infancy. So there is one alpha emitter that's currently approved by the FDA. It's an isotope called radium-223, and that's used to treat really end-stage cancer. It's a palliative application, not truly curative. But it's the first example, and so that's a huge hurdle to get over with the FDA to get that approved and out onto the market where it can be used in clinics. The rest of these alpha emitters are really in the stages of preclinical and clinical research. So very small studies are going on with animals or with people where they're just barely demonstrating how powerful these alpha emitters can be for therapeutic purposes.
Are you doing any of this research yourself?
So at Los Alamos, we really focus on the front end of this, the actual production of the isotope itself. And then we partner and hand off the isotope to end users who do the actual preclinical studies.
Are they using mice, or are they? What are they? Where are they at with that?
So the studies are really at various stages, because for each potential application that you want to use, each type of cancer, each new drug compound that you make with an isotope, you have to go through the entire series of tests to prove that it's effective and it's safe.
Right.
So I would say there are studies going on from start to finish in that application process.
At Los Alamos, you've got these isotopes because you are a nuclear weapons laboratory.
Well, we really have these isotopes because Los Alamos has the Lance Accelerator. So this is a very powerful machine that's used for lots of different purposes. The purpose that the isotope program puts this accelerator to is specifically isotope production. So Lance is capable of accelerating protons to very high energies. And at IPF, we're designed to take protons at 100 million electron volts. So moving very, very fast. And we have a target station where the protons can impact into various target materials. And when you bombard materials with these very high energy protons, you actually turn them into different elements. And that's how we make these radioactive isotopes that are of great utility for other purposes.
Another paradox, at least for the layman, is that you are working on such minuscule scale, and it takes such gigantic kind of industrial installations to do that.
Yes, absolutely. You know, the Lance Accelerator is a tremendous industrial endeavor. Our hot cell, where we work with these materials, is a giant concrete structure with walls that are 2 feet thick to protect the workers from the radioactive materials inside the hot cell so they can handle them safely.
I've seen their videos of you and others moving these materials around with like robotic tools.
Right.
So you're actually looking at this material through glass that's very, very thick.
Yes.
What is it that you're actually doing and moving around? Like, what is the nature of the work that you're doing with these robotic hands?
That's a good question. So when we bombard one of these targets with protons, the targets themselves are really about the size of a hockey puck. And they're made of a starting material that is chosen specifically to end up with the product that we desire. But when once we finish our bombardment, that hockey puck has only a tiny amount of the isotope that we want, and it has a lot of other byproducts that are produced at the same time.
Does it have any of the original material left?
It's mostly the original material, actually. And so we need to use those, we actually call them manipulator arms, to take our target and dissolve it and then perform chemistry on it to isolate the material that we care about.
So that's a whole different process, which also needs intense kind of safety measures, I assume.
Yes, that's very true. And for products like strontium 82 that are actually in clinical use today, we have to follow FDA protocols to produce that material. So there's a very high level of control and scrutiny and documentation, because it's very important, of course, to make sure that the product is of high quality and so it's doing what it needs to, and it's safe for use.
How did you get interested in this whole field?
Yeah, it was really kind of a shift for me. I'm a chemist by training, but I always worked in sort of other areas. But about 5 years ago, a job opening came up as the team leader for the isotope program, and I applied. It just sounded so interesting and just amazing to have the opportunity to have an impact in people's lives in a really positive way.
So what do you actually do all day?
Well, as program manager, I really have the overall responsibility to make sure that we're delivering the isotopes that are needed on schedule and within budget. And so I wish I were one of the people in the lab working on the manipulators, but more often I'm in an office, working on spreadsheets and reports and
right.
and that sort of end of it. So this is a huge team of people that's needed to make all of this happen, both everybody from mechanical engineers and nuclear physicists and chemists and quality assurance people. So it's really fantastic to be part of such of a great group of people.
Are any of the isotopes that you produced used within the lab itself?
A few of them are. We make small isotopes on more of the R&D scale to be used for tracer experiments, to look at what might be future applications, to collect fundamental nuclear data that can help inform future experiments. So a lot of the work that we do is utilized within the lab. But most of the isotopes that we produce on large scale go outside to commercial users.
What constitutes large scale?
So
teaspoon,
Right, yeah. And we don't tend to use mass or volume, because when you're talking about radioactive materials, you just don't have very much in a physical form. It's kind of amazing. When we make what we call a large batch of strontium 82, you have it in a flask and it looks empty, because there's so little material that it's really just kind of sitting on the bottom of the glassware, and by eye you can't see it. But in terms of radioactivity, you can absolutely detect it, and so that's how we keep track of where it is and make sure it goes where it needs to go.
So you basically send some people doing cancer research or cardiac imaging a little glass flask that looks like it's empty.
We usually ship in a liquid because that's easier to handle and manipulate, but essentially, yes.
We're talking to chemist Eva Birnbaum. Tell us more about the isotope that is used for cancer research and potentially cancer treatment.
So the isotope that we're researching right now is a material called actinium-225. And this is an isotope that's actually been researched for almost 2 decades now. and has been historically supplied from Oak Ridge National Laboratory. And so that initiated a lot of work and a lot of interest in this isotope. The problem is that the way that Oak Ridge is able to make this isotope is very stable, but they can't really scale it up. And so we've been teaming with them to look at how we can increase supply of this isotope. Because any time you take a new isotope to market, there's a tremendous chicken and egg problem. No one can afford to invest in the clinical research to get a new drug out on the market unless they're 100% sure that they have the supply that they need. And we, of course, can't afford to make the supply unless we're pretty confident that there's going to be demand. And so what's really happened in the last couple of years that has made this effort really kind of take off is investment from Office of Science, who sponsors the whole isotope program, to say, okay, we believe the demand and the need is there. Let's look at alternate ways we can make this isotope. So we use the isotope production facility at Los Alamos with our high-energy proton beam to bombard thorium targets and make actinium-225.
Is the research that's going on primarily or all government research, or there's also sort of private pharmaceutical, whatever, corporate research?
So the research on the production side to prove that we can really scale up this production has all been government funded. And that's a very important investment to kind of get us over this hump to get to higher supply, steady state supply levels. The research on the application side is a combination of funding from agencies like the National Institutes for Health and definitely some private investment by small companies who, you know, see the promise of actinium-225 and want to make it a reality.
I always wonder, because there have been kind of investigative stories that have broken over the years about government-funded research that then ends up in the hands of private corporations that then charge vast amounts of money for it, even though our tax dollars have gone to fund the research in the first place, and yet we don't really have the access to it that many argue we would deserve.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. On the production side, an isotope like actinium-225 would be very difficult to transition into the private sector because you need these high-energy accelerators, you need these large machines to make these isotopes. And so, you know, for the foreseeable future, I would say that isotopes like actinium-225 are going to stay within the government's purview at facilities like Los Alamos and Brookhaven National Laboratory. On the application side, that gets much more difficult to control. And it's an interesting question because it's so expensive to bring a drug to market, to go through all the FDA approvals and to do all the testing that, you know, it's hard to take away the rights from the companies to then sell these drugs because they need to make back that investment. It's a real conflict.
Yeah. Now, you are trained as a chemist and you're doing this isotope work now. Do you hope to go back to laboratory chemistry someday?
You know, I really enjoy the work I'm doing now and helping facilitate moving what's, you know, essentially a research project at its inception to something that could be a real clinical, large-scale clinical application. So, you know, I remember my lab days fondly, but I think I'd like to stay where I am for a while.
Eva Birnbaum is a chemist at Los Alamos National Laboratory. She's program manager of the isotope program there. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.